Welcome to your OCR GCSE Psychology Revision Podcast. I'm your tutor today, and we're diving into one of the most fascinating and exam-critical topics in the social influence component, pro- and antisocial behavior. Whether you're revising for the first time or doing a final polish before your exam, this episode has everything you need: core concepts, key study details, exam tips, and a quick-fire quiz at the end. Let's get started. So, what exactly is this topic about? At its heart, it's asking one big question. Why do people sometimes help others in need? And why do they sometimes do nothing or even cause harm? The answer, according to psychology, lies less in who we are as individuals and more in the situations we find ourselves in. That's the key distinction the OCR exam board wants you to understand: situational versus dispositional explanations of behavior. Let's start with the big one, the bystander effect. The bystander effect refers to the finding that people are less likely to offer help in an emergency when other people are present. The more bystanders there are, the less likely any individual is to help. This sounds counterintuitive, doesn't it? You'd think more people means more chance of someone helping. But the research shows the opposite. Two psychologists, John Darley and Bibb Latané, developed this idea in the late 1960s, partly inspired by the real-life case of Kitty Genovese, a woman murdered in New York in 1964, while reportedly, dozens of neighbors failed to intervene or call the police. Now, later research has questioned some of the details of that case, but it was a powerful catalyst for psychological investigation. Darley and Latané identified two key psychological processes that explain the bystander effect. The first is diffusion of responsibility. This is when the presence of other people reduces each individual's sense of personal responsibility. Each bystander thinks someone else will deal with it. The responsibility is, in effect, spread or diffused across the group, so no single person feels fully obligated to act. For your exam, make sure you can define this precisely. Diffusion of responsibility is the reduction in personal responsibility experienced by individuals when others are present in an emergency situation. The second process is pluralistic ignorance. This is more subtle. It occurs when each person in a group privately believes a situation is an emergency, but because everyone else appears calm and is doing nothing, they conclude that it probably isn't serious. People look to others for cues about how to behave. If no one is reacting, the individual assumes there's no need to react. The crucial point here is that everyone in the group may privately be worried, but they're all reading each other's inaction as a signal that everything is fine. This is pluralistic ignorance, a shared misinterpretation of a situation where the group's collective inaction creates a false sense of normality. Now, examiners frequently ask candidates to distinguish between these two concepts, and this is a common area of confusion. So let me be very clear. Diffusion of responsibility is about feeling less personally obligated to act. It's not my job, someone else will do it. Pluralistic ignorance is about misreading the situation. If no one else is worried, maybe it's not actually an emergency. Both reduce helping behavior, but through different psychological mechanisms. Now let's move on to the key study you absolutely must know for this topic. Pilyavin, Rodin, and Pilyavin, 1969, the Subway Samaritan Study. The aim of this study was to investigate the effect of the type of victim, specifically whether they appeared ill or drunk, and their race, on helping behavior in a naturalistic setting. The researchers also wanted to test whether diffusion of responsibility would occur in a non-emergency situation. The procedure is where the specific details really matter for your exam. The study took place on the New York subway, a real-life field experiment. There were four Confederates, two males and two females. One male Confederate played the victim. He would collapse in the subway carriage approximately 70 seconds after the train departed. The other Confederates acted as observers, recording data from within the carriage. There were two key conditions. In the cane condition, the victim appeared ill. He carried a black cane and staggered before collapsing. In the drunk condition, the victim appeared to be drunk. He smelled of alcohol and carried a bottle of alcohol in a brown paper bag. In both conditions, the victim was either white or black, allowing the researchers to also examine the effect of race on helping behavior. The carriage was divided into two areas: the critical area where the victim collapsed and the adjacent area further away. If no one helped within 70 seconds, a model, another Confederate, would step in to help. Now, the results. These are the numbers you need to know. In the cane condition, the victim received spontaneous help in approximately 95% of trials. In the drunk condition, this dropped to around 50%. Crucially, help was often provided by multiple helpers, and there was little evidence of diffusion of responsibility in the cane condition. people helped quickly and frequently, even with many bystanders present. There was also some evidence of same-race helping bias, particularly in the drunk condition. The conclusions drawn were significant. Pilyavin et al. Proposed a cost-reward model of helping behavior. People weigh up the costs of helping, such as effort, time, or risk, against the rewards, such as social approval or reduced personal distress. When the victim appeared ill, the costs of helping were perceived as low and the rewards high, so people helped readily. When the victim appeared drunk, the costs, such as embarrassment or the perceived risk of dealing with an unpredictable person, were higher, so helping was less frequent. This study is also important because it challenged the diffusion of responsibility hypothesis. In a real-world setting, with many bystanders, people still helped, especially in the cane condition. This suggests that the bystander effect may be more context-dependent than Darley and Latane's laboratory experiments implied. Now let's talk about de-individuation. De-individuation is the process by which individuals lose their sense of personal identity when they are part of a crowd or group. When people feel anonymous, for example, when wearing a uniform, a mask, or being part of a large crowd, they are less likely to feel personally accountable for their actions. This can lead to antisocial behavior because the usual social norms and internal restraints that govern individual behavior are weakened. Philip Zimbardo's research is relevant here. In his 1969 study, he found that participants who were made to feel anonymous by wearing hoods and being referred to by numbers rather than names delivered significantly longer electric shocks to a Confederate than those who were identifiable. This demonstrates that anonymity, a key feature of de-individuation, can increase antisocial behavior. For your exam, remember, de-individuation doesn't always lead to antisocial behavior. It can also increase pro-social behavior if the group norms are positive. The key is that de-individuation amplifies whatever norms are salient in the situation. Finally, let's cover social loafing. Social loafing is the tendency for individuals to put in less effort when working as part of a group than when working alone. This is an antisocial behavior in the sense that it represents a reduction in individual contribution to a collective goal. The classic research here is by Ringelmann, who found that people pulled less hard on a rope in a tug-of-war when in a group than when alone. Ledene, Williams, and Harkins replicated this in 1979, finding that people clapped and cheered less loudly in groups than individually. The key distinction you must make in your exam, and this is a very common mistake, is between social loafing and social facilitation. Social loafing is the reduction in effort in a group. Social facilitation is the improvement in performance on simple or well-practiced tasks when others are watching. These are opposite effects, and confusing them will cost you marks. Now, let's move into exam tips and common mistakes. First, command words. When you see describe, the examiner wants you to state what something is, two or three developed points with supporting detail. When you see explain, you must go further and say why or how. When you see evaluate, you need to consider strengths and limitations and reach a judgment. When you see apply, you must explicitly link your psychological knowledge to the specific scenario given in the question, quote, phrases from the scenario to show you're doing this. For the 13-mark extended writing question, you have roughly 15 to 20 minutes. This question tests all three assessment objectives, AO1, which is knowledge and understanding, AO2, which is application, and AO3, which is evaluation. The OCR mark scheme rewards candidates who weave these together rather than presenting them as separate blocks. Don't write three paragraphs of theory and then three paragraphs of evaluation, integrate them. Make a point, support it with evidence, apply it to the context, and evaluate it all within the same paragraph. Common mistakes. Number one, confusing diffusion of responsibility with pluralistic ignorance. Remember, diffusion is about responsibility, pluralistic is about interpretation. Number two, describing Pilyavin et al. Vaguely. Examiners want specifics. The 72nd delay, the cane versus drunk conditions, the 95% versus 50% helping rates. Number three, giving generic ethical evaluations. Don't just say the study was unethical. Say precisely why. For example, participants in the Pilyavin study lacked informed consent because they were real members of the public who had not agreed to take part and they had no right to withdraw as they were on a moving train. Number four, confusing social loafing with social facilitation. And number five, in application questions, failing to quote or reference the specific scenario provided. Now for your quick fire recall quiz, I'll ask the questions, then give you a moment to think before the answer. Question 1. What is diffusion of responsibility? Pause and think. The answer: the reduction in personal responsibility felt by individuals when others are present in an emergency, because each person assumes someone else will act. Question 2. What were the two conditions in the Pilyavin et al. Study? Pause. The answer: the cane condition, where the victim appeared ill, and the drunk condition, where the victim appeared intoxicated. Question 3. What percentage of trials resulted in spontaneous help in the cane condition? Pause. The answer: approximately 95%. Question 4. What is de-individuation? Pause. The answer: the loss of personal identity and reduced sense of accountability that occurs when individuals are part of a crowd or feel anonymous, which can lead to antisocial behavior. Question 5. What is the difference between social loafing and social facilitation? Pause. Social loafing is reduced effort in a group. Social facilitation is improved performance on simple tasks when others are watching. And finally, your summary and sign-off. Today, we've covered the core concepts of pro and antisocial behavior for your OCR GCSE psychology exam. You now know the bystander effect and its two key mechanisms, diffusion of responsibility and pluralistic ignorance. You know the Pilyavin et al. Subway Samaritan study in detail, its aim, procedure, results, and conclusions, including the cost-reward model. You understand de-individuation and how anonymity can increase antisocial behavior. And you know social loafing and how to distinguish it from social facilitation. The most important thing to remember going into your exam is this: be specific. Name the study, cite the statistics, quote the scenario, and always justify your evaluations. Vague answers get vague marks. Specific, well-applied answers get full marks. Good luck with your revision. You've got this.